There's a video on YouTube. We're clearly in a shopping mall just outside a wall of glass. On our side of the glass is a little boy, maybe 5 years old. He's acting like an adult. He's holding up a cell phone, trying to make a video. On the other side of the glass, there's a full-grown man in his 30s, partially wearing a life-size sculpture made of colorful cardboard. You can see him smiling behind the giant red and gray head and the robotic arms and the yellow glowing eyes. And he turns toward the boy and moves the arms and legs, and the boy's face lights up. That man is Juniper Tongpoos, a Kansas City artist who has shown his work all over the world and who for the past year has been artist in residence working behind glass for all to see at Oak Park Mall. I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman. Today on KCUR Central Standard, we talk with this artist about his unusual work in an unusual place. Juniper Tongpoos, mall artist, welcome.
Thank you.
It's really nice to have you here.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here.
So, I mean, you've made art in Bulgaria. You've put on exhibitions all over Kansas and Missouri. Mm-hmm. Why the mall? How did this happen?
Well, they reached out to me. Carla Engel, who's the general manager of the mall, she noticed my work, and then she reached out to me, and like she was like, well, I have the space, you know, and you could do anything you want in there.
Mm-hmm.
And make stuff, and she, you know, took a chance on me, and so this thing happened.
I mean, every artist needs a studio, right? And they're willing to give you that space.
Yeah, it's been wonderful.
Let's back up a little bit. You grew up here in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Where in town did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in several parts. When my parents came or arrived here in the States, we lived off of Van Brunt.
And where did your parents move here from?
Oh, they're from the Philippines.
Okay.
And then I lived there for about 10 years. And then we moved closer to Raytown.
And as you're moving around Kansas City as a kid, were you always interested in art?
Yeah, it was something that kind of kept me busy. And I could go into these worlds and not have to deal with, you know, the outside stuff.
Why didn't you want to deal with the outside stuff?
Well, some of it could be a little rough, but it kept me focused.
Mm-hmm.
And I owe a lot to it, so.
And what kind of art as a kid were you interested in doing?
Well, I originally wanted to be a cartoonist.
Huh.
And so that kind of, you know, brought me to a world where, like, things are silly and they're funny and bizarre. And my dad, who worked at the Star for so many years, he used to bring home newspapers and I'd read the comics. And so, but then after that, I started making my own toys out of paper. And so I still do.
And I should say for our listeners that as he sits here at the microphone, Juniper is cutting up a red file folder. He had his own scissors with him in his pocket. He pulled them out and is making something out of paper, which we'll keep you updated on as the show goes along. This work with paper and then later on with cardboard, that's probably the art you're most known for. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yeah.
And what how do you describe that work to people?
Well, I would say that it's kind of like it comes from a very flat dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes from it pops out.
Uh-huh.
And then it expands. And so
what starts as a piece of paper, a piece of cardboard becomes this three-dimensional object. And as he's saying that, he's unfolding this what was just a minute ago a file folder, and it's starting to look like some sort of, I don't know, is it an insect? Is it a butterfly? Is it a flower?
I'm not sure what this is, but I know that it never existed before. Just right now.
Is that what you like about art? That it allows you to create things that didn't exist before?
Yes. It's one of those moments that are fleeting. And you have to be present. You have to be, like, you know, alert and aware. And it just happens, and then all of a sudden it's gone. So that's the reason why I do this. Because I think everybody could find their creative side. But this one is, for me, very personal.
How did you start? How did you go from working with paper as a kid, which I imagine is fairly easily accessible, to cardboard, and then to these big structures you make out of a particular kind of cardboard? Is it even cardboard? Is that the right term for what you use?
It's a corrugated plastic, but it looks like cardboard.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a it's very familiar, but it's. Allows it to be colorful too because it's plastic, and it has like a quality to it that it could be made into a large thing. I can create volume quickly, and it's durable enough that people can play with it.
What are some of the projects that you have made out of this corrugated plastic?
I do a lot of like temporary art exhibits, mainly for like fairs and stuff, like a Smoky Hill River Festival. I've done like theater sets. I'll be doing like theater sets for the Lorax production that's going to be at the Art Center in Lawrence.
Yeah.
And just like crazy stuff. Usually they call me up because they know that I can pull through.
I've seen some of what you've done. I've seen your work on display in downtown Kansas City some years ago, out at the Barney Alice Plaza. There it looked like all sorts of animals playing in the fountain, if I recall.
Yeah, that was fun. It was so challenging to work in that environment because it's outdoors, and usually I try to. I'm not really into like shocking people. I think when things kind of show up and. That's shock enough, I guess.
Speaking of the environment, I mean, you are now doing work in an environment that I think a lot of people would say does not strike them conducive to fine arts, the Great American Shopping Mall.
Yes. At first I was a little apprehensive of the whole idea, because you're on display, in a fishbowl, they like to say.
Right, because this is your studio. This is not not intended to be a performance necessarily.
Yes, but I think it's important to show people the real side of being an artist. Some of them they're not going into museums, they're not going into galleries. So the art world to them is kind of it's not on their radar, but when they go into the mall. And they see something that is normally not there. It's something different and interesting, I think. There was a time these two little kids, they came up to the glass of the studio and they started speaking to me in Spanish. Of course, I was like, luckily I know a little bit. So, but we were able to connect, at a very basic level of just like making things, and I try to use what little Spanish I know to communicate with him, and I think that's what's missing in the art world, I think.
How often did that happen at the mall? How often do you interact with the people on the other side of the glass?
It happens a few times when they're not like in their own little world.
Yeah.
But I get all sorts of people, like a cross section of society. Lots of people that just wouldn't normally even think about this sort of stuff.
Does that interaction change your art? Does it influence your work?
Yes, it does. 'Cause they're coming at it with a sort of honesty. I think like there are some people who criticize and tell me that it's not good, and I have to be. Okay with that. I have to be okay with whatever their opinions are. But most of the time it's positive.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. I know you've done drawing and painting as well, and photography too. You've done all sorts of art, but there seems to be a real connection for you in the kind of work you're doing, even as we sit here, making this piece of paper come to life. Why is that? What is it about this that you think really speaks for you?
Well, I think, you know, every time I cut paper or make something, it brings me back to that, you know, part of my childhood that was special.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and what I try to do is to share that moment with other people.
Can you describe what you now are holding in your hand, by the way, which, again, I am not kidding. The moment this interview started, this was really just a plain red file folder that was nothing. What is it now?
I don't know. It's a new species. It's a winged species, probably an insect. It's got three legs. So, but I'm not sure if it flies forward or backward or sideways. I mean, it could be anything.
I mean, it's incredible.
Thank you.
We are taking pictures of this as we go along, and if you want to follow it on Twitter, it's at KCURCST, and you can keep up with what Juniper Tongpoos, the Kansas City artist we're talking with today, is working on. The mall space, of course, is your studio. It isn't really an exhibition space. Describe it for people who haven't actually been out to Oak Park Mall to see it.
Well, it's... It is, for me, it's sort of like it's a lab.
Uh-huh.
Part of it is gallery, but then, like, the other half is a studio where I make things and I make a huge mess. That's the other thing that people don't realize. You know, when you're making things, it's just like, it's just chaos.
Yeah.
And it's like paper and cardboard everywhere and I do try to keep it somewhat clean, but the reality is that when you're making things, it's a free for all.
Yeah, you're a messy worker.
Yeah, but I do clean up.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, are you there so often that people come actually just to see you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In the beginning, you know, I would be because I worked at Johnson County, which is just right down the street. I would go there after work and then I would go and interact with the people and I would change things out and they'd, you know, see something new, or I would perform these kinetic works in front of them. But I moved to Lawrence because I started working for KU. And so now I can only do that on the weekends. And so, yes.
Do you, as you think about the work you do, how do you think it has evolved over the years? I mean, you're talking about some of the most significant work you do is work you were doing when you were a child, but how has it changed?
Well, I think what I try to do is I try to put myself in creative situations where I have to kind of struggle to find my place. Right. Like, say, if I go into the world of, like, right now I'm taking a tap dancing class.
Really?
Yes. And I'm like, I'm not a dancer.
Right? Why are you doing it?
I don't know, because it's something interesting and so different. And I suck. I'm terrible. But I think that it could be useful, you know, to try to get it to merge with this world, yeah. The art world. Or this making world, I guess. I don't know.
To figure out how to bring a performance art in touch with a making art.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I'm going to do it, but I know that it exists somewhere.
How long does the residency at Oak Park Mall last?
It's a year long residency, so I've been there since February of last year, so February will be the end.
So you've got about a month.
Mm-hmm.
Any big projects in the time you have left?
Well, other than doing the theater stuff, I've got an exhibition at the Lackman Library at the moment.
Where is that? Remind us.
It's off of 87th Street.
Okay.
And they've got some of my sculptures in their library.
Very good. And, of course, on your website, a lot of folks can find pictures of many sculptures you've done in the past of big dinosaurs and small insects and everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you're working now at KU. What are you doing out there?
Oh, I work for the School of Architecture, and I'm one of their shop manager. And so what I do is I help other people make things. And it's been great.
Sounds like a fulfillment of what you've always been about.
Yes.
That's Juniper Tongpoos. He is an artist, currently the artist in residence at Oak Park Mall. You can find out more about him by checking out our website, including checking out our Twitter feed at KCURCST, where you can see a picture of this amazing creature that he has made even as we've been sitting here today. Juniper, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Hey, do you want this?
I'd love it. Thank you.
Cool.
When we come back, we'll kick off KCUR's week of examining the impact that the first year of the Donald Trump presidency has had on the metro, talking with immigrants and refugees in Kansas City and those who work with them. How did their lives change in 2018? I'm Brian Ellison, KCUR Central Standard. We'll be right back. It's KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. 1 year and 2 days ago, President Trump was sworn in, having run a campaign that included promises to build a wall along the Mexican border, to remove undocumented immigrants from the country, to cut off federal funds for cities that don't cooperate with federal immigration enforcement efforts. Just a few days later, he would issue his first ban on travelers from several majority Muslim countries, though those efforts would be struck down repeatedly by courts and are still under review. All this week, KCUR is taking a look at a year of Trump, and today we're kicking that off with a conversation about how refugees and immigrants here in the metro area have fared. What has this year been like for people who live here in Kansas City, but who are repeatedly reminded they aren't from here? Sophia Kahn, you run the nonprofit KC for Refugees, and welcome.
Thank you.
What is KC for Refugees?
So a couple of years ago, I realized that although I have personally been involved in helping refugees through the Muslim community for over half a decade, I realized after the first Syrian refugee family arrived under Obama's 10,000 Syrian refugee surge to Kansas City, that there were many, many people within our community who were interested in knowing about the refugee program and wanting to help and get to know the refugees that were being resettled in Kansas City. And there was no such organization that could collaborate between the community efforts and the refugees and bring them close together. So that's when I realized that we had to form this organization. It's a volunteer-based organization that educates the community about refugees as well as brings the refugees and the community closer to each other.
You've been working with refugees and immigrants for many years. You yourself came to the U.S. as an immigrant.
Yes, I did.
Long ago. Tell us about that.
So in the mid-1980s, when we were well settled in Pakistan and my dad was a very successful businessman, he started taking a transition here and knowing the political situation in Pakistan, realized that it was time to move us here. So with a heavy heart, you know, as a teenager, leaving my friends and my family behind, I moved here and went back and forth and finished my med school. And we've been settled here very successfully in different parts of the country since then, me and my siblings and my family.
And so that's 30-plus years. You've raised your own family here. How personal do these pronouncements from the Trump administration and the actions, how personal do they feel to you? Does it feel like it's about you?
It's too personal for me. First of all, I'm an immigrant. I'm a Muslim. And the ban on Muslims and the targeting of the Muslims in general during this election campaign has affected my family personally. We not only are devout Muslims, you know, both me and I only have girls, we wear headscarves. So when we go out of the house, our identity is right out there for as a target. And so we are being targeted by, you know, some of the supporters of the current regime.
Well, I mean, can you give me an example of how you've been targeted, as you say?
Sure. You know, my daughters, both on the day of the election, the day election results were announced, were at KU going about their business, going to classes and stuff at campus. And a group of young men wearing caps saying, "Make America Great Again," approached them, and my older daughter, they started calling her slurs and throwing trash at her while she was just walking towards the student union. And the other daughter, she was coming back from her classes towards her dorm, and a truck full of guys came and started screaming at her, shouting at her, throwing cans at her. And, you know, both the girls felt very scared and unsafe within their own environment.
Yeah.
And obviously when they told me, you know, I was scared for the safety of my kids too. So, you know, it's been a difficult journey every day thinking when I leave my house, although I'm a physician, I go out and treat people despite what their religion or skin color might be. And that's who I am. When I'm on the street, you know, and I'm parked even at a stop sign, I'm looking around, making sure no one is pulling out a gun from a dashboard and shooting. I mean, we're scared for our safety every day, for my safety and for the safety of my girls.
Has it gotten better as the year has gone along? Has it gotten worse?
I think you just get used to things and you get used to being like that, which was very new to me in the beginning of this. The only good thing that definitely has happened, we have seen tremendous support from within our own community, within the student group in KU. My daughter started getting texting saying, if you ever feel unsafe, call us. We will accompany you to the library or to the classes. So the outpouring of love and support we have received from our community has been tremendous, and it's been heartwarming.
Let me ask another of our guests, Naudi Solano. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
You also came to the United States many years ago. Where from?
From Dominican Republic.
And we should say you're now working as an immigration counseling manager at Jewish Vocational Services here in town, which means it isn't just your story, but the stories of people you work with that you know. What would you say that immigrant communities in Kansas City are feeling right now?
They're feeling a lot of despair, a lot of confusion. They're very scared. A lot of our clients that we're assisting now are TPS holders, temporary protective status. Some of the ones from Honduras, they've only gotten a 6-month extension. So they are confused on what's going to happen in July. Are they going to cancel it as they have done for El Salvador, Nicaragua, Haiti? Or are they going to renew it for them?
And just to remind us, canceling their temporary protection status would mean that these folks, who many of whom have lived here their entire lives, would have to go back.
Live in the shadows.
Go back is back to somewhere they have never really lived.
Exactly. They have never really lived, or in the state of how the countries are now, gang-filled, go back to a death sentence.
And so when you say live in the shadows, you mean stay here as undocumented, as
exactly.
illegally live here.
Yes.
So, I mean, you've been doing this work in various parts of the country, but even before you came to Kansas City. Is it different here from anywhere else? Do people feel safer here or less safe?
I would think that it is the same. I think that there's fear. There's fear that their families are going to be separated. There's fear that they will have to go back to a country that they do not know anything about anymore, that they will have to start from zero with no jobs. Some of the people that have been here for a long time are now older and they can't necessarily work, or some are sick. So I think the feelings are the same throughout the country.
Can you give me an example of one of these families that you've worked with recently, without telling me their names or anything,
sure.
Of course, but in general, what's one story of kind of a typical family dealing with this?
So I can tell you a story about a guy, a man from Nicaragua. He has a sick mother there, and because he is a TPS holder, he has legal status and he is able to travel back and forth. And that's what he was doing, visiting his sick mom. And now TPS for Nicaragua has ended, and he can either stay here and not visit his sick mother ever again. And if something should happen, he wouldn't be able to go, or else he will have to stay out of the country. Or he can go back home.
But none of those seem like good choices.
Exactly.
Yeah. Awan Ater, welcome to you.
Yes.
We're glad you're here. You've also come to the U.S. from elsewhere many years ago. What's your story?
I came to the U.S. as a refugee from Sudan. And after that, Sudan was divided into North and South Sudan. But I come from South Sudan.
And when you say you came as a refugee, help us make that distinction. We hear those words all the time, immigrant and refugee. What does it mean that you came here as a refugee?
Because my life was threatened in Sudan by the government. So I crossed the border to Egypt. I became a refugee. And then I was resettled in Kansas City.
Is there a large Sudanese community in Kansas City?
Yeah, there is a large community here in Kansas City. And Kansas, St. Joseph, North Kansas City, we have a good number of South Sudanese here.
So what has this past year been like for a community of refugees who have now been here for many years? Has this felt like, for some reason, a more dangerous or more threatening time?
The city itself is safe, but the politics that have come up in last year have made it very difficult for refugees to know whether they will be here or they will go back. Hmm. It's very, very, very difficult. Some of them are really in trouble because their parents, who are supposed to be reunited with them, will not be able to come. And some of them, they didn't get a green card for almost 2 years. They applied 2 years, they didn't get a green card. They are worried more than others because they may be deported.
And it doesn't seem like the number of green cards being issued or other reasons to have permission to stay are going to be
plentiful. Yes, it's really, yeah, they are worried. They are worried whether they would be here or will go back. And the problem that let them leave their country is not resolved. So they are completely in trouble.
I want to ask Juan some more questions, but I also want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. We want to hear your stories, your questions as well. If you yourself are an immigrant or a refugee who is living now in the Kansas City Metro, we would love to hear from you. What has it been like in this past year of Trump? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. Or if you have a question, you don't have to necessarily be an immigrant and refugee, but you'd like to talk with our guest today, call us at 816-235-2888. Awana Ter, you have shared your own story, but you work with others in the community, right?
Yes.
What do you do?
I work as a community organizer, and also I was a case manager for almost 16 years as a refugee case manager. And I have been connected with a lot of refugees from different countries of the world.
What other countries are we talking about here?
We talk of Africa, the whole, Nepal, Syria, Middle East, I say mm-hmm. Middle East countries, mm-hmm. and then from Liberia. So we have a lot of refugees that we have resettled and are all around in the northeast side of Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah. I want to ask all three of you your perspective on the impact of things that happen far away. They're part of political discourse and disagreements among politicians and things that are said or not said and as reported in the news. I'm thinking especially of last week's meeting at the White House where the president said or did not say a vulgarity to describe countries in Africa and Haiti. I guess, is that just so many words coming across the television, or does that have a real and personal impact on people here? Sophia?
Definitely a personal impact. You know, I think the people running the White House right now have forgotten what America really looks like right now, today. It is a very diverse country, and people from all different places and parts of the world who have come here and settled here are contributing to the economy and feel proud and honored to be part of this land. And every day, we are Americans. I always tell people, I do not need to fulfill anybody's litmus test to prove how American I am. Every day of my life, I love this country. You know, we remain honest citizens here. We pay taxes. We contribute. Within my own family, we have 6 doctors. We have a Berkeley grad who runs a business. My dad, you know, always taught us to follow the law, you know, do everything properly, you know, love and So I don't really care what comes out of there. It's just that it hurts our feelings.
Yeah, and so there's a degree to which you can kind of let the water run off your back, but some other part of it strikes inside.
Yes, what really strikes me is there are other people that feel like this, not just the person who said it, but people who support him, and that really bothers me.
I have to ask you in particular, Awan, you're from South Sudan. It is an African country that has endured great hardship and war. Did you feel like the president was, if he said these things that many have confirmed he said, did you feel like he was talking about you?
Definitely. What I could say about the statement, if it was from him, that may not reflect American public. It might be his own views. But coming to the Africans who attempt to be that shithole, it's a sign to them. They have to look into what they are doing, whether they are doing fair, that allows their people to leave the country, to go to other countries as refugees. That is a very good appeal to African leaders. But to Americans here, we see it's not all Americans, because when we came here, all Americans, they support the refugees, regardless of where you come from. You get beds, you get food, you get cars, even they volunteer to give you cars free, mm-hmm. which they cannot give to other Americans who are here, but they give to refugees. So we know it is not from Americans. It is an individual, might be connected to politics, and that will reflect only on the African countries or other countries that are not doing good to be able to help the people not to leave the country. What I would add to it is that the person who said it, who may be the president, he should have a plan. If he doesn't want refugees to come to the United States to come and help in development, as said before by the doctors, that we contribute to the economy of America, if he doesn't want that, why not make a plan to work with the countries that refugees are coming from to solve the peace, make the peace there in those yeah. countries so that yeah. the people cannot leave the country? Yeah. Why not do that?
Let me ask you, Naudi, the people you work with, these families who come to Jewish Vocational Services for assistance, is the primary problem one of poverty or finding the right social services or the right kind of sort of financial supports? Or is there this, we're talking a lot about sort of fear and about an emotional need for support. Is that the bigger problem right now?
Is the bigger problem fear?
Yeah, I mean, how much we're talking about the psychological impact of this year, the year of this administration. But does that risk taking the focus off of sort of the problem simply getting by, finding places to live, and so on?
I think the problems are intertwined. It is a fear issue, and it is something that needs to be solved. Ending the legal statuses for in different ways for all of these people that have lived here, or people who are refugees and have been here for a while and they want to be reunited with their families. I think that it is a policy issue, along with all the emotional and confusion that comes with everything that's going on right now.
That's Naudi Solano. She's an immigration counseling manager at Jewish Vocational Services. We're also talking with Awan Ater, who is from South Sudan and works with immigration and refugee nonprofits, and also Sophia Khan, a physician who runs the KC for Refugees nonprofit. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll take some calls from listeners. You can join them. Join the conversation at 816-235-2888. How is a year of Trump affecting immigrant and refugee communities in Kansas City? I'm Brian Ellison. Stay with us. We'll be back in a second. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison in for Gina Kaufman. We are talking about a year of Trump and particularly the impact it has had on immigrant and refugee communities in Kansas City. My guests today are Sophia Kahn, who runs the KC for Refugees group, Naudi Solano, who is an immigration counseling manager at Jewish Vocational Services of Kansas City, and Awan Ater, who resettled to Kansas City himself in 1998 and has worked at several immigration and refugee nonprofits since. In fact, all of our guests have come from other countries, and all of them have worked a great deal with others in need in the community ever since. Let's take some calls at 816-235-2888. Let's start with Rebecca in Kansas City, Kansas.
That would be me.
That is you. Hello.
Hi. Hello. So I just had some general questions. I'm a United States citizen, and I think a lot of us are feeling disheartened by our current administration. And I would just like my voice to be heard more. Like, how can we get more involved? You know, I can sign as many petitions as possible, and I can march and do as many rallies as possible, but I feel like there's definitely more that people can do in our community to show support and to advocate for those who don't have as much of a voice.
I appreciate that question, Rebecca. Let's put that to our guests. If a person wants to somehow show support for refugees and immigrants in the Kansas City area, where would you direct them? What are some things they could do? Naudi?
Sure. I think that starting with calling your elected officials is a very important step that some people believe maybe that they don't actually make an impact, but they do. You can also speak to your elected officials on the local level here, because there are bills being presented here on the local level in Kansas City that go against policies that should be helping these communities that we are talking about.
Sort of personal political advocacy.
Exactly.
What else do you recommend, Sophia?
So the reason we started this organization, obviously, part of it was advocacy, and, you know, a third of that, what we do is advocacy. But also we let community directly get involved with a lot of volunteer opportunities that directly involve the volunteering with refugees, you know, mentoring them. And we have a housing project starting very soon, and I'll be publicizing that on my Facebook page. So if you look through our Facebook page, we provide many, many opportunities for you to directly get involved within the Kansas City area, whether it's with your work, whether it's with your school or group of friends or just yourself, to have ways to get involved. So we encourage you to look at our Facebook page for upcoming opportunities.
Awan, are there things that folks who want to show support to the refugee communities you have worked with, the things that you would say they should do?
Yes, they should contact the organization Resettling Refugees, like JBS, Don Bosco, Dalai Lama, and
Catholic Charities. Yeah.
Yes.
Catholic Charities.
Yes.
Jewish Vocational Services was JVS.
Yes.
Because those organizations, they need financial support. They need volunteers.
They need financial support.
As well.
They need everything. They need furniture. They need money. Yeah, everything.
All right.
Yeah.
Good suggestions. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to be on our air today and talk with our groups who work with immigrants and refugees. Martin from Kansas City is with us. Hi, Martin.
Yeah. Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. I'm a immigrant from Germany by choice and not by need. So I'm not a refugee or anything. I'm educated. I've been, you know, 30 years when I came over, but I had to pay $5,000 to $10,000 in lawyer fees to get my legal status here in Kansas City. I'm a business owner with like $2 million of revenue per year. So I wonder why the Democrats want people from Mexico or other countries just cross the border and say, hey, I'm an immigrant, and they don't have to pay anything, and they can stay as long as they want, and I have to go through all this money and investment to do this. And
so,
there should be, you know, some kind of equality, right?
So, Martin, we're talking about the experience of immigrants in this past year of Trump. It sounds like for you, this year hasn't really been bad.
No, it hasn't changed at all. But I think, you know, there should be a same level play for people from countries. Like he says, oh, I want more people from Norway and not from Africa or Mexico coming across, right? But it should be the same price for anybody come to the country.
Okay, right? I appreciate your call, Martin. Thanks. Let me give our guests a chance to respond. Sophia, I guess one thing that Martin's call illustrates is that not every immigrant's experience is the same.
You know, and I think I appreciate his call and his comment, and I was in his shoes, and, you know, I belong to a very privileged family, and I'm a very well-to-do physician, paid off house, a fleet of cars, but he needs to understand we cannot function without the help of every level of support from the community, whether it's somebody who's working for us in our businesses, or people when I go to the hospital, the nurses, the cleaning staff, the kitchen staff. We have people from every financial level who need to be part of a society to make it successful. And we need to respect that. Not everybody can afford a $10,000 bill, you know, and everyone is still appreciated and respected. And I think that's how I look at it, that God has created a different level of talent and everything in humanity so that we can function as a society. And I personally don't agree with the statement that everyone who comes to this country need to pay a tab of $10,000. So,
yeah, one of the questions this raises for me is on a personal level, you may feel close to some people around you here in Kansas and Missouri, but at the end of the day, you know that Kansas and Missouri voted for Donald Trump. How do you deal with that fact, knowing that your fellow Kansas Cityans voted for someone who has caused you or people you care for or work with personal pain?
When you vote, you don't know whether that person will really represent you. That might have been a problem. Because we, as refugees, after we qualify to be voters, we get everybody who is trying to contest. We don't know who is who, but we vote to make sure that person represents the government, as a government representative for everybody in the country. So we didn't know that Mr. Trump would be able to say this. Mm. But we know America is stronger than him. They will represent America instead of what he has said. Yeah.
I mean, Naudi, you are not doing explicitly political work when you're working with these families, and yet it's hard to get away from the politics, as callers like Martin demonstrate.
Yes. Well, thankfully, I am new to Kansas City in this area. I'm very.
Where were you before?
I was in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia.
Right outside Washington, not too far from Washington, D.C.
Not too far. And then before I was in D.C. So thankfully, I have not experienced any ill feelings. And I have not necessarily, I don't know who voted for Trump and who didn't around me. I have had very pleasant experiences around Kansas City and at my job. And with the immigrant and refugee community, so I'm not sure how to answer that because thankfully I've had a good experience.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Dave in Overland Park. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We've worked, or my wife and I have worked with Dr. Khan for the last few months with one refugee family in Kansas City. I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but it's a rather large family, and they're in a very, very tiny house. Number one, we're trying to figure out how could we help them to get a larger place. Is there a list of homes? And also, communicating with the parents is a little difficult, so at some point we might need an interpreter. The kids do an excellent job of English, but it's hard going through a child talking to their parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've run into these problems, but I don't think they're insurmountable, but we'd sure like some guidance on how to go about helping these folks, not just, you know, taking books and gifts and things like that, but to get them a job and also some better housing.
Thanks for the call, Dave. And Naudi, Dave makes the point that again, the problem facing many refugee families is housing and jobs.
Well, thankfully, JVS has vocational services. They assist refugees and immigrants and anybody really find a job, so they can all come to JVS and meet with one of our employees and get assistance in finding a job. And we also have interpreter services to hardworking ladies who help people who need translators daily.
And as Dave mentioned, you've worked with his particular family, Sophia.
So Dave, we have several families we are mentoring without the help of the agencies, because I know they're limited with their resources and they're using them for the new refugees that are arriving. Feel free to email me. I'll give you my cell phone and let's work on all those things that you mentioned.
You know, I also am curious. Are there concerns with any of the families you work with specifically about being deported? Now, do you mention the ones who are on temporary protective status, not sure what their future holds? What other risks are there for particular families here in the Kansas City area that you have worked with? Or can you think of other families or examples that they watch the news and actually that leads directly to saying, my gosh, I may have to leave, or I may not have access to services I need?
Yes. For those with DACA or TPS, and that their legal status is going to end or have ended, some of these people are sick, and they will have to stop these services or else they will be in fear of being, found if they choose to stay here. Some people are homeowners. Maybe they will sell their house or rent it out, take it out of their name so that immigration will not know that it's them there and that they're here and they can find them. Some of them are business owners. They will have to get rid of those businesses if they choose to stay here.
Yeah. Sophia, I want to ask you specifically. I mean, you are Muslim. As you mentioned, you have been active working in interfaith organizations for long before this current presidency. Does it seem to you that the experience of Muslim immigrant groups like the ones that were part of the travel ban, people from countries that were part of the travel ban, is that a different experience than the broader immigrant community is having?
Definitely, you know, because we are talking about even families being able to visit their families now. You know, I have a friend who has been here many, many years, and they're established. Her husband's a very successful physician. They run a research group also. She's afraid to just go visit her mom in Iran because she's afraid to go and perform the pilgrimage just because her passport says that she was born in Iran. I have friends who have relatives, even in Pakistan, they're thinking that Pakistan could be the next country on this ban. They're sometimes afraid to just go visit a sick mother or attend a wedding. So even regular day normal Americans who are in any way connected to even other Muslim countries, not just the countries that they are in the ban, are really affected and are concerned.
Let me ask any of you, have there been any silver linings in this? Has there been anything good that has come from the challenges that this past year has presented?
Personally, for me, tons and tons of things. You know, I was so depressed after the result. I'm a Muslim. I'm an immigrant. I work with refugees. Every way, reason for me to feel sad. But, you know, people have really come out and shown their support, their love. You know, they've reached out to us. And I have great hope. I have great hope for this country.
I'm seeing nodding heads at the table, and I'm afraid we are out of time and have to leave it there. That was Sophia Kahn. She runs the KC for Refugees nonprofit. Naudi Solano works with Jewish Vocational Services, and Awan Ater works with refugee communities in Kansas City. Thanks to all of you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Truly grateful.
Thank you.
Listen back to this show, including our earlier conversation with artist Juniper Tongpoos, at kcur.org/centralstandard. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Coy Duggar, and Suzanne Hogan. We had help from intern Matt Groby. Gina Kaufman's back tomorrow. I'm Brian Ellison. Stay tuned now for Up to Date, which is coming up next.